Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well, what tips do they have for you and I, and I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Love it or hate it, today's show is all about exercise and how you can use it to fulfill your potential. My guest is Noni Carr, a Melbourne-based psychologist with a passion for cycling and the benefits of exercise for our well-being and success. Noni worked as a school psychologist before starting her private practice. She now works with individuals to help improve their well-being and relationships and boost their motivation to pursue their goals. And today she's going to talk to us about the benefits of exercise for your brain and mind and give us some tips on how to incorporate it into our daily life. Welcome, Noni.
Thank you very much, Ellen. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've got lots of questions for you, as I always have for my guests.
Yep.
Noni, before we get deep into our discussion about exercise, I'd love you to tell us a little more about you. So you're a counselling psychologist. What does a counselling psychologist do, and how does it differ perhaps from the work of a clinical psychologist?
Well, it's interesting. I think there's not a huge amount of difference between, well, there's very little difference in terms of the number of years of training and the requirements for psychologists across the board. So clinical, counselling, ed and dev, sports and exercise, health, we all, and there's a number of others, we all have to complete a certain amount of training, but the emphasis in the courses is slightly different. So sport and exercise psychologists, for example, do a lot more on sport and exercise and performance in that arena of our lives. Clinical psychologists tend to have a little bit more of an emphasis on the medical model in their training. Obviously, I haven't done clinical psychology, so I don't know. That's my understanding of clinical psychology. Counseling psychologists have more of an emphasis on the therapist-client relationship in terms of we use a variety of theories and approaches to therapy. We tend to be a little bit more eclectic, and our focus is on well-being and mental health rather than mental ill health. So often it's client-driven in terms of what they're wanting. I tend to not follow a medical model where I engage in a lot of diagnostic processes. I think that at times a diagnosis can be helpful, but it's not always needed or helpful for a client. So I don't go down that particular clinical medical model.
Okay. And who are the sorts of people who might seek you out?
I quite enjoy working with adolescents. I don't see many in my private practice. Adults, I've seen such a wide variety of people, issues such as anxiety, performance anxiety, and that might be related to sport and exercise, or it might be related to getting on stage and performing in that way, or it might even be standing up in front of a meeting and delivering a presentation to colleagues, or it might be some social anxiety. But obviously, like most psychologists, depression is there, so I enjoy working with self-esteem and confidence, lots of issues as well.
Okay. So a lot of the sorts of things, I suppose, that we all struggle with to some extent.
Absolutely. It's the worried well that I work with.
Yeah. So these might be people who have particular goals that really seeking to achieve, or they realise that perhaps their anxiety about speaking in a work in front of a big group at work is holding them back, and they really want to kind of
totally pass that. Totally. Okay. Men, women, across the, you know, gender divide and sexualities, all of that sort of stuff. I've done a little bit of training in that area as well. So
yeah. Okay. That makes perfect sense. And thank you. It sets a nice context for us.
Yeah.
Not only are you a counselling psychologist, you are also a keen cyclist.
Yes, I am.
I know that you engage in racing at an amateur yep. level. Tell us a little bit, because that's our scene in terms of the exercise that we're going to talk about. Charlie, tell us a bit about how you're involved in cycling.
Okay, so I got involved in cycling over 10 years ago, and I started just riding short distances, and it got a bit bigger, a bit longer, and someone convinced me to try some racing and to try riding on the track or the velodrome. So I've raced on the velodrome, so shorter distance races but also longer. I've also done a lot of road racing, so distances from anywhere from 50 to 100 kilometres. And I quite enjoy time trialing, so it's me against the clock. And I've also done some cyclocross racing, which it's a lot of fun. You get muddy, you jump off the bike, you jump over barriers, you have to run up hills, you have to carry your bike. And it's a winter sport and it's a lot of fun. It's, for me, that's just a bit of fun rather than, totally competitive. But I also enjoy going out with bunches and riding long distances and riding up mountains. Not that I do it as fast as others, but it's just about getting out and seeing nature, experiencing that. And it's also, for me, it's a way of me engaging in some self-care. So it's about my mental health as well as my physical health.
Mm-hmm. And is that it's a bit of your time? Plus, obviously, we know a bit about the mental health benefits of nature, and we're going to talk about the mental health benefits of exercise.
Absolutely.
That self-care piece, is that sort of just looking after you?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's I know that if I exercise, I feel better and my mood is much improved, and so I make a point of trying to do it most days. For me, it's also about looking, just being out there and doing something for myself.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Your thing.
Yeah, something I enjoy doing.
Yep, perfect. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about some of these benefits of exercise for our mental health. And it's really timely that we're having this conversation because this week, Sport Australia, which used to be the Australian Sports Commission, published its Sport 2030 plan. And one of its key areas of focus was in increasing sport and exercise participation across the Australian community. And I was taking a look at the plan, and it had a couple of really interesting facts in there that were a bit startling, actually, I have to say. One of them was that Australians now watch more sport than they play.
Wow.
A lot of sitting on the lounge. And it must have been while you were talking about cycling, I was, because we're quite keen, my husband and my son in particular, keen Tour de France viewers.
Yep.
And so we've just had that, here on our TV and some late nights involved spectacular
scenery. Very late.
But it has been watching it and not doing it.
Yep.
And the other thing, this report actually cites a UK study which revealed that the least fit child from a class of 30 in 1998, so only 20 years ago, would today be one of the five fittest in a class of the same age.
That's a little bit scary.
It is a little bit scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was quite startled by that. Now, that's a UK study, but and I don't know, we don't have the information. I certainly don't have the information to hand to say what the situation is in Australia, but I suspect the trend is similar, if not quite to the same degree.
Yeah, could be. Yeah, it's the resistance particularly among adolescents when I was working at the school to actually go out and do something was pretty high, and trying to talk them around what would be doable and least difficult was, that was the approach that I take. And it's also the approach I take with clients as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to ask you a little bit more about that a little later. But before we get into that, I think one of the things for me, certainly as a parent, is realizing the role that adults have in modeling the right behaviors for our children. That's something I'm very conscious of. Mm-hmm. But I suppose even for us as adults, I think it's helpful to understand what are some of the actual benefits of exercise for our brain? How does it help?
So there's a number of things that it helps with. In terms of if we think about how the brain, the neurons in our brain communicate is through neurotransmitters. And when we exercise, there's a number of neurotransmitters that increase, you know, the level of those increase in our brain. Serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine.
It's one of those words, isn't it?
Yep. And there's some other ones that also, the other things like the endocannabinoids, which those are picked up by cannabinoid receptors, which is exactly what cannabis links to and marijuana, those sorts of things. But when all of these chemicals or neurotransmitters increase in our brain, also the other thing that increases is brain-derived neurotrophic factor or BDNF. And all of these things have a significant impact on how we feel. So when BDNF increases, that improves our learning and memory. Serotonin actually improves our mood. So if you think about antidepressants are often SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So it actually prevents serotonin being used up and disposed of in our brain so that there's more around. So more serotonin due to exercise is going to have a similar effect on our brain. Dopamine is when that increases with exercise, we are more likely to be more motivated to do things. So if we get up and do something first thing in the morning, we'll get ourselves going to go and do the things that we need to do. And then, of course, the BDNF increases, so our learning and our memory is going to be more effective to learn after we've done a bike ride or a bike walk, a walk or a swim or something else. Norepinephrine increases our focus and attention. And the endocannabinoids, and there's one which is anandamide, which has been done a bit of research on, increases that feeling of well-being or gives us a bit of a high. So that's that runner's high or the high we get after exercise. So when all of these things happen when we exercise, then we're going to feel better. We're going to be able to work more effectively. So exercise is good.
Excellent. Practice. It's very impressive, doesn't it? Something as simple as going for a brisk walk or a run or a swim can do all of that in our brain. So
absolutely.
So it's increasing our motivation.
Yep.
It's increasing or improving our mood.
Yep.
It's helping us to learn more quickly, to think better.
Yeah. And our memory is much improved as well. And we feel better.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. And I think it's interesting that point you said, because I had heard read a bit of research previously about how, and I think some of this might have been done by the Black Dog Institute, but I'm not absolutely sure, that the use of exercise, not necessarily as a substitute for an antidepressant, but that it seems to have a similar effect to the antidepressant.
Yes, absolutely.
And therefore certainly in perhaps some of our more mild mood challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's not if you're prescribed an antidepressant, then it's a good idea to take it, keep taking it. But going and doing some sort of exercise might be helpful as well, is more likely to be helpful as well. But if you're just feeling a bit flat and down, then going and doing some exercise might actually improve your mood in the moment. And there's research that's been done that suggests that when you engage in exercise, there's a lasting effect.
Okay.
So engaging in exercise on a regular basis, if we're then injured or unable to exercise for a period of time, that effect on our mood actually lasts through that.
So it's not, because I can imagine that for those people who become very, I don't know if reliant is the same, but they do actively use exercise to help them with their mood, with their concentration, with their focus, with their motivation.
Yep.
And then if they are particularly operating at that, I suppose, upper levels of exercise, and we'll talk about what kind of exercise we're talking about in a moment.
Yes.
Yep. that, you know, becoming injured could be quite confronting, I suppose.
Yeah.
But you're saying that it should last and it shouldn't make a huge difference.
Well, I think the mood effects will last. Mm-hmm. However, if you're operating at that high level in terms of if you're competing at a national level or an international level, then and you're injured and you can't compete, sometimes that competition, that exercise, that sport, particular sport you're engaged in, is so much part of your identity that when you can't engage in it, then that can have impact. So it's not necessarily the lack of exercise, it's the all the cognitive stuff that goes along with not being able to exercise.
Okay, so a whole lot of other psychological effects.
Yes, that, absolutely.
That are separate yeah. from the mood issue, but in terms of mood,
yeah, if absolutely.
We're exercising regularly, that should have an ongoing effect, even if we're unable to. It might not be injury; it might just be illness or even just busy life for a short period.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Okay, and we sort of covered emotionally, but are there any other benefits to exercise in terms of our emotions?
Well, I suppose it's when we have that high, that natural high that we get from exercise or we go out, we just have that, I feel good having done that. And it's also that sense of achievement. You've set yourself a goal and you've completed that goal, achieved that goal, and that gives you some positive feedback. And then, of course, when we often, not always, but we can sometimes make arrangements and engage in exercise in a social setting. So when we engage in exercise with people, with friends, then we've also got that influence of on our mood.
Yep.
We're spending time with people, so that improves our mood as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they both sort of resonate with me, particularly that achievement element. I know, mm-hmm. and I'm not a hardcore exerciser by any means, although as I said, mm-hmm. I am very aware of what I model for my kids.
Yeah.
But I do what I call my well-being walk on a very regular basis, which really is. And I went out there this morning because the weather's mm-hmm. turning nasty here right now. So I thought I'd better get in there while I have the opportunity.
Yep.
So I went for my well-being walk. And part of that for me is just, it's one of those, right, this is a goal for today. I'm going to get out and walk for about 30 minutes and feeling good about the fact that I've achieved that I can tick it.
Absolutely.
It doesn't linger as one of those I should type things across the course of the day, which does then have an impact on the way you think and that kind of busy noise in your head that detracts you, then start to, have those thoughts of guilt and, didn't achieve what I said I was going to and all of that kind of flow effect. Yep. So I think that, and I often describe the benefit to me of exercise, not only, and I do certainly notice the mood benefit. I often put a podcast in and listen, so I feel like I'm learning stuff. I know there's plenty of research out there that suggests that even just walking is good for your creativity, solving problems, answering questions that might have, thinking all of that through and processing stuff. But for me, there's just a little bit that goes, and now I feel virtuous for having done that.
Well, I find I often, when I'm out riding, if it's not a specific session that I've been given by my coach where it's an intensity session, if I'm just going out for an easy ride, I think. And so there's no way I'm going to ride with earphones in because that's not safe. But I'll be thinking and I'll think about things that I want to. So I thought about this podcast, this interview while I was riding yesterday and today and thinking about other things and I come up with ideas when I'm out riding. So it's quite useful in that way.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems to be. And I know that, research out of Stanford that talks about walking, but I can only imagine that just moving your body is part of this being
Absolutely.
Able to process information, solve problems, come up with new ideas that we just can't do sitting perhaps at our desk or in one spot.
Yeah, absolutely. And so that idea of I'm a bit stumped about what to do or how to solve this or where to go, I'll go for a walk. I'll go outside, I'll get some fresh air, and those sorts of things people do use anyway, but now there's research coming back saying actually if you move, if you get up and walk around and think and even talk out loud to yourself, if you can, if it's not too embarrassing, lots of people around, then then you can actually come up with those ideas more effectively.
Yeah, I am the crazy woman that you might see walking the streets, because when I have problems to solve or I'm thinking perhaps about a work thing, mm-hmm. something that I'm, you know, an idea mm-hmm. that I'm working on, I have been known to pull out my phone and actually use the dictation facility on the little notes uh-huh. app and talk into the phone so I can record things while I think of them.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, your brain does keep working, and by the time you've got home, maybe you've, you know, forgotten some of those. So I want to capture them in the moment.
Yeah, for sure.
And Nani, when we're talking about exercise, I mean, exercise is not one thing, is it? And you've spoken about your cycling mm-hmm. and I know I walk yep. and I'm also very yep. keen on yoga. Mm-hmm. But what degree, I think a lot of us get a bit scared, or when we talk about exercise, we think, oh mm-hmm. my goodness, this means, you know, hours in the gym, or it means something at a very intense high level. What mm-hmm. kind of exercise, what level will benefit us in these ways?
I think any exercise is good. And, yep. you know, we think about there's exercise generally falls into three categories. There's the strength exercise. So that's those sort of exercise will build muscle tone. It will improve your bone density. And then there's the cardiovascular exercise, which is where your heart rate gets up and your breathing gets up. And that exercise is particularly good for our heart, lung, cardiovascular system. And then there's flexibility, which might be the Pilates, yoga, stretching, those sorts of things, which are also particularly good for our body in terms of being able to keep moving as we get older.
Yeah.
And I think we actually need a mix of these three in our lives, but it doesn't need to be. So walking can be strength because it's weight bearing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's dependent upon what works for us and what we need at that particular stage of our lives. So a new mum, her strength might be walking around with baby, lifting yes. baby up.
yes.
Or, you know, if we're, you know, at work sometimes we have to lift things at work, that's strength. And it's about, you know, making it work for you. And sometimes going and seeing a physio, if you've got some sort of physical limitation, and getting a physiotherapist to help you with that, or an experienced, well-trained personal trainer or an accredited strength and conditioning coach might be helpful with those things. Or if you've got a specific goal, if you want to run a marathon or a half marathon, or you want to ride around the bay or part of around the bay, which is in October, you might want to go and speak to a cycling coach or a running coach, or you want to go and do bodybuilding or body sculpting, you go and see a specific coach for that sort of thing. But you don't need to. I think that when we think about exercise, it's got to be fun. You've got to enjoy doing it. So there's no point saying, I've got to go run for half an hour when you hate running.
Yep.
I don't like running. I'm not going to go running. But if someone loves it and they want to go for a run, awesome. But it is about finding that what it is that you enjoy and doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. And I know when I talk about sometimes in workplace wellbeing workshops that mm-hmm. I run, we get to talking about exercise, and I say really it is very much, as you've said, about finding what works for you. But yep. I think that point you made about those three different types of exercise are really important for us to bear in mind as well, mm-hmm. that we really want a kind of a combination of those three things. I know for me, on my walk today, because I had just been watching a video that was released by the Institute of Sport as part of this Sports 2030 report, mm-hmm. suggesting that, you know, if you are walking, try and get your heart rate up a little more.
Yes.
So, you know, I was only walking around my local area, but I chose a route that had a hill, and I said, right, mm-hmm. I will just charge up this hill just to get my heart rate up. You know, just for those couple of minutes.
Yep.
Yeah, thinking about that. And I hadn't really thought about walking as weight-bearing, but I guess it is. I think too, the yoga that I do is probably weight-bearing as well, especially when you're doing planks.
Absolutely, yep. And that's strength, because you're definitely, that core strength is really important for our back even. So, you know, doing that and yoga, of course, you've got the flexibility in there as well, the stretching that we do.
Yeah. I have spoken before. In fact, I did a whole episode with Susie Redding in the UK about the benefits of yoga for our psychological well-being, and I could talk about it forever in terms of my own personal
experience. I listened to that. It was very good. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that because there were a few things she talked about. I'm like, oh, I need that.
I have to come back to that. And it's even, you know, you talked about for a new mum carrying the baby around. I know for me when when both my boys were born, we were living in Sydney in a townhouse. Mm-hmm. And I noticed a significant difference in my muscle tone in my legs because we had a multi-story house and I was walking up and down stairs carrying baby, carrying all the stuff that go with babies.
Yeah, absolutely. And
little things like that. I think if we can even be mindful perhaps of the elements of exercise that are already perhaps in our everyday life.
Absolutely.
And just be a bit more conscious about it. So we say, right, I will. I know I was working in a co-working space this week and I went in and there's a lift and there's the stairs and my automatic reaction was to go towards the lift and then I went, no, I will take the stairs. It was only two flights. But those little kind of being mindful or conscious about our incidental
exercise. Absolutely. And that's something that I talk about with clients and you know, even with students, I'm like, well, can you get off the tram or the train, not the train, but the tram or the bus, a stop early and then walk? And so that way they're increasing that incidental exercise.
Yeah.
And taking the stairs instead of the lift.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose it is consciousness. In this video that I was watching, and I'll post a link to it in the show notes for this episode, the tagline or the promotion that has been launched as part of this Sport 2030 campaign is to find your 30. So find your 30 minutes of exercise each day. And that doesn't necessarily mean, like you say, 30 minutes of running. If that's not your thing, if it is fantastic, or 30 minutes of cycling, it might be 30 minutes of walking or even just. Yeah. You know, and it's an accumulative thing too. It doesn't need 30 minutes in one go, as I understand it.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. So the recommendations, so I did a bit of research to do a presentation to some colleagues and I looked at that. And for adults, it's recommended that we should accumulate, so that's all added up, 150 to 300 minutes of moderate intensity physical exercise a week. So that's 2.5 to 5 hours over 7 days.
Mm-hmm.
So you could do 30 minutes every day and it might be 5 minutes, 10 minutes, another 5 minutes, another 10 minutes and another 10 minutes. Or it might be 30 minutes all in one block. And that's a minimum.
Yeah.
So absolutely you can do more.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think and there are, I mean, when you start to think about it like that, that I just need to add up all these little bits over the course of the day and then it becomes easier to think about, okay, I'll just park the car a block away from school when I go to pick the kids up and walk that extra block, or perhaps we'll walk all the way home if we can rather than automatically. I know they're the sorts of things I work on.
but also it's good for kids to get into that habit of walking that extra distance rather than being dropped at the school gate. And, you know, there's the other benefit of that. It actually reduces the amount of traffic around schools if you're actually parking further away and walking with the kids. And I know someone, you know, within the cycling, you know, she rides with her kids in a cargo bike to school. And the older one is now starting to ride herself, but it's in a cargo bike. So that's just how they get around. And they've done it since the kids were born. But it's a cycling family, so it's really easy for them. So getting a cargo bike when you don't ride, probably not.
But if you're going to drive expense.
If you're going to drive the kids to school, park a block away. Or and as the kids get older, maybe they can catch the bus or public transport so that they are getting to that habit of walking.
We have one car in our household, our family of four, and whilst that poses challenges at times, one of the reasons why I've been reluctant to get a second car has been because it does force me to think about if the car's not available, if my husband's got it, for example, well, how do I get to where I need to be? Well, I can either walk. I mean, I have the luxury of that because I live in a smaller regional city and we're not too far from lockdown, so I can walk. Or I can do that combination of walking and catching public transport. So, you know, if you have to walk to the bus stop or walk to the train station, there's a little bit of that incidental activity, those few minutes that we've added to the day to accumulate over our week.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Noni, we've talked a bit about mood and emotions and the brain. Mm-hmm. How else can exercise help us with success, perhaps in other areas of our life?
I suppose when you're exercising and you're setting yourself that goal, it's about that sense of achievement. So when you feel good, you're more likely to, and you're feeling you're getting this sense of achievement when you exercise, you're more likely to then apply that to other areas of your life as well. And so that sense of feeling, you know, success might have a flow-on effect at work, and, you know, in terms of the way it affects the brain, that can have an impact on what happens work-wise. And I did a little bit of research on this earlier, and it was interesting what came up is that most people who are successful in life, and this is, you know, research based on, you know, people who are successful in, you know, actors, singers, even business people, there seems to be a correlation with exercise.
Okay.
So when they're successful, they're more likely to be exercisers. So I suspect that's around that motivation, that attention and focus, as well as that drive, that feel-good factor that exercise has.
Okay, so we can use that, I suppose, and I can sort of imagine that if somebody has set themselves a goal, perhaps you've never really exercised much and you engage in something like that, you know, the couch to 2K. So you go from, you know, not doing any kind of exercise to running a couple of kilometres at a stretch. That would then, you know, fuel that motivation, but fuel that sense of success. If I can do that, then perhaps there's other things that I haven't tried that I could do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that it's just that I think once you get going on something and you have that sense of achievement, you do start to feel better.
Yeah.
So you're more likely to do things.
Yeah. It's all kind of, you know, it's part of a system, isn't it? It's sort of all connects and works together to get you feeling good, achieving more, having that success that then presses you forward towards other success.
Yeah, absolutely.
Noni, there's increasing discussion about the importance of exercise as a form of medical treatment. Mm-hmm. I know I've read some articles recently about how doctors are starting to look at, well, there's certainly research evidence to suggest that, you know, some forms of exercise can be very useful even in the treatment of things like cancer. Mm-hmm. And obviously we've talked about the mood effect. So how, you know, if it was, for want of a better word, treatment, or someone who really was struggling perhaps in one area of their life, how would you recommend that they incorporate exercise into their daily activity to help with that?
I suppose the first thing I tend to do, I'm going to ask them, do they do any exercise? And then I explore, well, if they're not, what did they used to do? Did they used to do exercise? And what do they enjoy doing? And so together we talk through what their exercise history might be and how it might work to include that into their life now or include it back into their life. So it might be arranging to meet a friend. Often meeting someone to do some exercise makes it a little bit harder to pull out of.
Yes. Bit of accountability in there.
Yeah, absolutely. So generally I will talk about doing things, free things, rather than, I don't say go join a gym, because, you know, it's expensive to join a gym. And if you join a gym, often you're committed financially for a long period of time. It doesn't always work for people. So I might talk about things that are easy. So it's going for a walk, going for a run. If they've got a bike, going for a bike ride. Or if maybe if they enjoy yoga, maybe going and finding a yoga class. There are a lot of yoga schools which will offer a discounted trial period. So that might be helpful to find out if you even like it. You can also use yoga apps on the phone, so it's a bit cheaper. Sometimes it's about if someone just can't do the getting out and about, it's like, okay, can you do a star jump? So doing a series of star jumps at home, have you got a skipping rope, or can you just go and get a piece of rope? You don't have to buy a specific skipping rope. Just use a piece of rope and skip. Or you know, maybe you love dancing, but you've got some great music that you love, so turn it on loud and dance around your house. You don't have to go out and do it. You can do it at home. And maybe if you love dancing, maybe going and learning a dance, going to a dance school, you know, ballroom dancing or Latin dancing, or going and taking up ballet or jazz ballet or something like that, something that you will find fun. Because the more fun it is and the more you enjoy it, the more likely you are to do it.
Yes.
I had one client who, quite a while ago, who was playing Pokemon Go, and he just wouldn't go very far. And I said, how about you go somewhere different where you haven't gone before and go for a walk? Because Pokemon Go, you can't play sitting at home.
That's not how it works.
No, you've got to be out and about. So that's one of the it's not something I recommend to people who don't play it, but it's something that for those who do play it, it's go out and walk. So go somewhere where you haven't been and walk. So go and walk around Albert Park Lake, or go and walk around Botanic Gardens, or even go further afield to the Dandenong Ranges or up to Mount Macedon. So I'm obviously based in Melbourne, so these are places that I know. Going up to King Lake or down to around the Port Melbourne and Princes Pier or St Kilda Pier. So going, and sometimes that walking is unpleasant because it's just really suburban. So finding somewhere that's a little bit more interesting might be helpful. And, of course, then you've got that bonus of when you are out in nature, that has an impact, a positive impact on our well-being as well. So being out in wild nature or being along the beach, those things, there's research suggesting that that sort of stuff is really useful for our mental health as well.
And I think we sort of know that intuitively, don't we? I think we're drawn often to those locations because they do make us feel good, but now we've got the evidence to support
absolutely.
Okay, so making it fun,
doing
stuff that you enjoy, perhaps incorporating a bit of curiosity or adventure or some of these other
absolutely
for you. You like to learn new things, so you walk around and exhibit somewhere, or you really enjoy the beach, so you walk along the beach.
So and make it social.
Really kind of make, I love that too. I actually just had a message from a friend saying that she had tried, we'd been talking a bit about the you know, benefits of exercise for well-being. And she's tried a couple of Zumba classes, which is kind of exercise, dance, exercise combination.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she's a very extroverted person. I can well imagine that that would really, really suit her. So it doesn't, it's interesting, isn't it, that we've kind of, I don't know, and I think this is probably for most people, but you use the word exercise and people think gym, running, high intensity, you know, challenging.
But it doesn't have to be.
No, and it's not, is it? But I don't think we always think about it that way.
Yeah, although there is research around that suggests that HIIT training, so high intensity interval training, is actually of quite a benefit to our body. So that's the strength in endurance or strength cardiovascular systems, and that sort of workout might be 20 minutes long.
Okay. Yep.
But it's short interval training of high intensity. So those sorts of sessions are a little bit easier to include in our lives. And there's plenty of that around on the internet talking about that. And in fact, Dr. Michael Mosley he's a big advocate of HIIT training. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose because one, and my next question is going to be about how we, you know, I think most of us know at some level that we should exercise or perhaps should exercise more. And for some people, it's a very natural part of what they do. They've grown up with it or that it's, you know, it's intrinsic to their life. But for many of us, and I include myself in this, that hasn't become, you know, a really perhaps not a daily habit, but a really a strong kind of push. There's always so many other things that we have to fit into our day.
Yep.
So time becomes an issue. Mm-hmm. How do you advise people to get beyond that kind of, this is something I should do, to something that I will and can do?
I think it is about making it fun and enjoyable. So if it's if someone told me you need to go out and run for 20 minutes every day, I'd find that really difficult to do.
Just feels like an obligation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's my body doesn't work well running, but you know, even running, you know, 100 meters down the road, I'm just not interested in that. But I'm happy to go and ride 200 kilometers on my bike. So, you know, I'll spend, you know, 8 hours on my bike riding, but I'm not running a minute down the road. So it is about making it fun, making it easy for us, and making it social. And it might be just that incidental exercise of, well, it's not an obligation, but you know, I need to go to the shops. So rather than driving the 1K, I'm going to walk the 1K. If you don't have a huge amount of stuff to buy, take a backpack, you know, put stuff in the backpack and walk home. So it's finding that way around it. And sometimes it's, you know, can you wake up half an hour earlier and go for a walk and see the sunrise? So seeing something, making something that you can get out of it. So getting up to see the sunrise or going and seeing an amazing view, looking out from the top of Mount Dandenong down towards Melbourne, actually going to the beach and then, you know, on a hot summer's day, I'm going to go to the beach, I'm going to walk along the beach. At the end of my walk, I'm going to have an ice cream.
Yeah.
It's not something we do every time we go out, but sometimes you go for a walk with a friend and then stop for a coffee.
Yeah. So incorporating some rewards in there.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes that reward is I get to spend half an hour or 40 minutes or an hour talking with my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the reward.
So I think for me, the why, those other little, you know, why am I doing this? It's because I get not only the benefits of exercise, but I get to spend time with a friend or I get that reward at the end. Or because I know that I'm modelling the right sort of behaviour for my kids. I know that works for me.
And sometimes it's about how do I feel when I've finished?
Yes.
And so that focus on what am I going to feel like? What's my mood going to be like when I've finished this going for a walk or a bike ride or a run or a yoga session or dancing around my living room? If I'm going to feel good after that, then that's what I want.
Mm.
So that's sometimes the motivation, and sometimes it's about linking it to that that end result. And sometimes if people are trying to get up and do it in the morning because that works better for them, and that's what I try and recommend because it gets us going. Actually, lay out your clothes the night before, so it's really easy to actually get up, put your workout gear on and go.
Yep.
And then you feel good when you get back, you get home, you have coffee, you have breakfast, and then you get going on your day.
Mm. So reducing the obstacles that making it easy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yep. Yep.
Yep. Okay. The other thing that we haven't touched on, but I know it's certainly something that helps for me, is actually monitoring what you're doing using things like the various fitness apps and trackers.
Yeah. So sometimes those apps and trackers can be really useful. So I definitely, obviously with my cycling, because I've got a coach, I monitor what I'm doing. And sometimes those can be really useful. So you can monitor your heart rate, the effort you're putting out, if that works for you, use it. It's not something that everybody needs. If you've got one of those trackers, use it. And it's really useful if you have a goal that you're trying to get to. So you want to be able to run a half marathon. So in the lead up, you know, in the 2 months leading up to it, you can track your pacing, you can track how far you're running, and, you know, if you're going from, you know, from couch to 2K, you can track where you're going. And often smartphones have got a simple tracking system in them, so you can track using that. You don't need all the fancy equipment.
No, and in fact, I've got a very basic one, which is just, I use it, it's my watch, which is incorporated, or it's kind of linked to an app.
Yep.
But at that very basic level, I have a goal to reach 1,000 points, which is either 1,000 steps, that's right, not 1,000, 10,000 steps if I'm walking.
Yep.
Or if I increase my intensity a bit, it gives me extra points for that. So you know, I get closer to 1,000 if I walk up a hill or I jog.
Yeah.
But also it's got that buzzing thing. So it buzzes on my wrist. I've been inactive for too long, which I find quite helpful because it does remind me, I'm just sitting at my desk to get up and think, okay, well, I should get up and I'll go and perhaps, you know, if I'm working from home, go and bring the washing in if it's out the, you know, on the line or just even wander into the kitchen to make myself a cup of tea or I think I'll walk out to the post box and see if the mail's arrived.
Absolutely.
Reminders.
Yep.
Okay. Are there any other particular resources that you tend to recommend, Noni, for people who are looking to incorporate a bit more exercise into their well-being?
I tend not to recommend resources just because it's not always helpful for an individual to go and read a book or go and do something when maybe they just need to go and walk. And
it's the doing of it.
It's the doing of it. And I often talk about, well, using it as an experiment. Well, go and walk. How do you feel before? How do you feel during? And how do you feel after? And that's their gauge of whether it's helpful for them. I did go and have a look look for some resources, and I've got, I found a couple which actually look quite good. There's one was published in 2016 called 8 Keys to Mental Health Through Exercise. And there was another one which was published a bit longer ago in 2011 called Exercise for Mood and Anxiety, and it's got proven strategies for overcoming depression and enhancing well-being. And I'm happy to send those to you so you can put them up.
That'd be great.
And the other thing, if people are struggling with motivation, I might suggest, sometimes suggest Mel Robbins, 5 second rule, which
I did think about her when you mentioned that idea of just having everything laid out before the night before, because I know that's part of what she talks about. And I might link to her. She's got a great little video that I've seen a couple of times talking about that.
Yeah. So that concept of, well, you know what? I'm awake now. I'm going to do it. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, out the bed, putting your gear on and actually moving before you've had that time to think, to change your mind.
Yep.
So acting as soon as you have that decision. And there's actually, I saw a TED talk, a very short TED talk, it's 10 minutes or might be a bit longer, by Wendy Suzuki.
Called, I just saw that recently too.
Yeah, The Brain-Changing Benefits of Exercise. And that's something that's, you know, she used herself to experiment on and how exercise changed her brain. And I think that's quite interesting for people to look at.
Yeah.
And of course, anything that Michael Mosley does, and he was on Insight, there was a two episodes of Insight where he was there talking about just this exercise for well-being and almost as a medical treatment, clinical treatment for depression and various things. And so is quite full. Lots of people talking about their personal experience with exercise and how it's helped for them as well.
Perfect. Okay, and where can people find out about you?
So my website is www.enhancelife.com.au. My practice is Enhanced Life Psychology, and I've got a Facebook page and an Instagram account. So I try and post regularly. I get a bit lazy sometimes. sometimes on the social media. But yeah, my website definitely is a place to see about me, and my Facebook page, and I think my personal Facebook profile is public. Not everything is public. So if you search for me on Facebook, Noni Carr, you'll see some stuff.
Okay, that's right. I can link to all your profiles, your social media,
yep,
your website, and obviously people, if they wanted to contact you, can contact you through that. And you are based, yep, in Melbourne for our Australian, yes, listeners, or those in the southeastern corner of the country.
Yes, absolutely.
Noni, thank you very much for your time today. I've really enjoyed our chat. I'm certainly feeling a bit more motivated to get out there and do some more exercise. I think really understanding the benefits to us, not just the stuff that we kind of all know about how it's, mm-hmm, good for us and good for our health, but to really, yep, understand a bit more of the nitty-gritty of how it's good for our brains, how it's good, yeah, for all those other areas of our life in terms of our success and fulfilling our potential. It,
yep,
can make the big difference between us, you know, not doing as much exercise as we should, to really getting out there and finding our 30 minutes for our mental health and well-being.
Yep. Okay.
Fabulous.
Thank you so much. It's been enjoyable.
I hope my conversation with Noni and the tips she has given us for making exercise simple and fun has inspired you to find your 30 minutes of exercise each day. I might just do a few star jumps in my office after this. You'll find the links, tips and resources that Noni has recommended, as well as her social links and contact details, in the show notes for this episode. Go to potential.com.au/podcast. Perhaps while you're there, you might like to follow the links to write a review of the podcast in iTunes. I read every review and truly appreciate your feedback and the time you've taken to provide it. Today's episode brings season 2 of the Potential Psychology Podcast to a close. I'm sending big thanks to our producer, Andy Marr, and my production and editorial assistant, Jay Abillo. Thank you most of all to you for sharing my conversations with our amazing guests and for your ongoing support of the podcast. We'll be back in a few weeks with season 3. I'm excited to say that our dance card is full and we already have fascinating and clever guests lined up for the whole of the season. Some of the topics we'll cover include the psychology of cinema, video therapy, and how stories help us to thrive, what we ordinary mortals can learn about performance from a psychologist and Olympic athlete, how to best manage stress at work and avoid burning out, and we'll be talking about families, music and mindset, resilience and happiness on a global scale. Join me for season 3 of the Potential Psychology Podcast and let my guests help you to live, learn, flourish and fulfill your potential. Thanks for listening.